Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken in time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
D&D Versus is a spooky, scary, vile, and violent podcast intended for mature listeners. Content warnings can be found in the episode description. Okay, welcome back to D&D Versus, an actual play D&D adventure where one dungeon master, that's me, Yanato Blue, sets all of his focus, all of his energy of monsters and potential evils in the depths of a mine onto a single player. So to recap the first episode, Stephen Hark woke up in a coffin, buried, having been put there by the Church of Honda Days as a corpse. And much to the surprise of the gravekeeper, Pringle is now up and walking around. He made friends with Captain Ludlow of the Order Infernus, a disgraced captain who has been demoted to this island, and set on a plan to help go after the marvelous Professor Frankenfooter, who left a note with his corpse, well, formerly corpse body, to be exhumed. Along the way, though, he caught the attention of the Lady Blanchette, who is the manager of the mining operations on this island, which produces the rare but extremely useful and dangerous substance known as black powder. Agreeing with the Lady Blanchette to clear out an infestation of the mines that has halted operations, Stephen has set off into the mines with his companion, Captain Ludlow. And so that's where we will begin. First, JT, welcome back. Thanks for rejoining me for episode 2. If you could, before we dive into the mines, tell us something about Stephen and his previous adventure before his death and rebirth on this island.
Sure. So as a reminder, Stephen died because his party did not like him much. And in a dungeon probably not unlike the one that we are now about to delve into, he was left in a pit trap to die. Where he bled out and starved to death, kind of. And he is not looking forward to repeating the experience. However, he is motivated by a little bit of self-preservation.
So we left off with you and Captain Ludlow just passing through the threshold of the mine with your squires, a dog-headed boy by the name of Groucho and a pigeon-headed young man by the name of Marks, waiting for you at the mouth of the cave. As you and Captain Ludlow proceed deeper into the mines, you find the beginnings of tracks on the ground that are used for mine carts to transport ores and other materials from deeper into the depths. And as you follow these tracks just a little bit deeper, you do see that there is a break or a fork in the path. Hard to your left, there is a small alcove that leads to a ladder that goes down into the darkness. There is a sign against the wall above the ladder that says testing, storage, and development, but the tracks continue down the other way, straight ahead of you, deeper into the dark depths, and it begins to slope downward. Captain Ludlow stops and looks to you. Which way do you want to go?
Well, let's see what's down the ladder first.
So as you lead the way down the ladder, you can see some light down below. Give me a perception roll.
That is a 5.
Okay, so with a 5, you know, you're clambering down this, it's an iron ladder, so you're making a lot of clanging noise. So most of what you're hearing is just your own noise of descending the ladder. Once you get to the bottom, though, you are in this enormous cavern that has a large, sturdy-looking wooden structure built into it. You can see barrels all around. You can see a couple of mine carts at the beginning of another set of tracks that contain various ores and materials. The large structure, the wooden structure that I mentioned, seems to be closed up and dark, but there are flames and lights around here. What would you like to do?
What is in these barrels?
You open up the barrels one by one and you find that these are raw materials. You find barrels containing what looks like, give me a nature roll.
7.
Okay, so with a 7, You find one barrel containing what look like just sturdy looking rocks, another barrel that contains these rocks that are kind of green in nature, another barrel that smells to high heaven of rotting eggs, another barrel that contains black rocks, and another barrel that contains these sort of grayish rocks that do look a little bit shiny, like they have like shiny metals in them.
So Stephen, as a reminder, does not know what black powder is or any of the materials that go into it. So I would like to note, in the interest of honesty, that he's not being particularly careful with regard to bumping these items. He doesn't need a torch in order to see, but does Captain Ludlow?
So Captain Ludlow is squinting. There is a single torch in this cavern. It's sort of mounted right by the door to that large structure that I mentioned. So it's casting dim light in the entire area, but he's not having a good time seeing any kind of recoils when you take the top off the barrel that I mentioned smells like rotting eggs. I'm going to roll for Captain Ludlow to see how well he's familiar with it as an order. So he does pretty well. So he kind of covers his face and he goes reaching for like a kerchief and he wraps it around his face to cover up the smell. And he says, that's going to be sulfur. And it looks like they have most of the materials here that are used to make the black powder, as he looks at the barrels that you've been examining.
Fascinating. Could we make some of this black powder?
I suppose if we had time. And he glances over at the building and kind of walks up to it. There is a paned glass window that he kind of like cups his hands over around his eyes to peer through into the darkness. And he says, There is the equipment in there. This is the primary place that they develop it for safety so that it's not exposed to the external elements.
Maybe on the way back, or, you know, if we have time later. Will you remind me what the paths available to me at this point are? So we got to the bottom of the ladder. I'm surrounded by some barrels, a couple of carts. What are the directions that I can go?
So you can go back up the ladder, back to the original path that I mentioned from the entrance, or there is another tunnel that is leading out of here and seems to be going downward into the darkness that has its own minecart track. There is a cart here that contains more of those rocks with the sort of shiny ore in it. So you have two options from this space. Or you can go try to go into the building if you wanted to.
I will go up the ladder and continue along the original minecart path.
Ludlow follows you. He's hesitant about lighting anything, but he can at least make you out right ahead of him. So he's staying, you know, relatively close behind you. Eventually, after a couple hundred feet of descent, the path splits. You can give me a perception roll if you'd like, or, you know, you can roll nature to try to analyze what might be coming up out of either side of these forks or anything like that. So start with a perception roll.
My perception is 9.
So with a 9, these tunnels aren't silent. You can hear noises coming up from the depths of them, but how much of them happen to be natural noises or, you know, the sound of hot springs or things like that. You know, there's gurgling, sort of bubbling noises kind of echoing up. So you're not getting a strong sense of which of the two paths these noises are originating from with your perception roll, unfortunately. So perception doesn't give you a whole lot of information in terms of what's down the left or right. What would you like to do?
So given that my options are left, right, or go back, I'm going to go left to start.
Okay, so the minecart tracks do continue down both paths of the fork. You proceed down this path. Walls are very well hewn. You don't see any signs of tools, so you get a very good sense that there's no digging happening here. But eventually, just by grace of your dark vision, you do start to see shining metal glimmers in the walls of this particular tunnel. And as you proceed just a little bit further, you come to another fork that has a little bit more of an opening space. And you can see evidence that this is a spot where miners were recently working. You see pickaxes, you see cleaning equipment, you see a couple of carts that are partway loaded with more of that particular ore. But you don't see any other evidence in terms of what might be going on here or what's moving around. There is another fork in the path, again, left or right. Which way would you like to go?
I will go left.
So continuing left, you proceed again with these walls still showing that silvery glimmer of whatever metallic ore is being mined from this particular area of the tunnels. You realize that you are continuing deeper and deeper, but you can give me another perception roll as you begin to approach another fork.
That is a four. I did roll a critical failure on the check.
Wow. These are real bad rolls for this
session. I have not rolled anything above a 10 this entire session.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, you reach another fork in the road. And even with a four, you can tell that the left fork is beginning to ascend, whereas the fork on the right of this one continues to descend. But that's all a four will give you.
Well, in that case, I will follow the fork to the right to go deeper.
So as you continue down, you are peering through the darkness and you begin to see something moving up ahead of you. I don't want to hold you to that four, unfortunately, because these things aren't necessarily trying to hide themselves. But you begin to hear this sort of bubbling noise that's been kind of ever present in the sort of white noise that you unfortunately haven't been paying too much attention to. But that bubbling noise seems to come up and you begin to hear this gaggle of bubbling noises that sounds like. And these shapes rush out at you. And what you begin to make out in the darkness coming from up ahead are these maybe waist-high creatures that look like large chickens or turkeys rushing at you from the darkness. What does Steven do?
Steven is going to look very confused for a moment because he's aware of turkeys. He's hunted turkeys. He's a ranger. He understands nature, but he's never seen turkeys of quite this size. However, he is going to react pretty quickly. He'll draw his longbow and he will prepare to fire. I assume you want me to roll initiative.
That is a correct assumption.
Six.
So with a six, I will let you get off a single arrow before we start initiative, but then we will commit to initiative as these turkeys rush at you through the tunnel. So go ahead and roll an attack for me.
23. Finally, our first roll over 10.
All right, that's going to be a hit.
Deal minimum damage, which is 5. And I believe, if I understand the 2024 rules correctly, I'm able to apply the longbow mastery trait, which is slow in this instance. So the speed of that creature will be reduced by 10 feet.
With that hit, I've divided up these abyssal turkeys into groups of three. And so there are 9 of these rushing from the darkness at you. One particular rafter, and fun fact, a rafter is the collective noun for a group of turkeys. I was not aware of that until I started preparing for this session. But the first rafter of turkeys was way ahead of the other two. So you do slow them down, but they are still going to be able to reach you on their turn because I rolled a nat 20 for their initiative. So the way I'm resolving that is that they were just the lead, like they had a full, you know, turn's worth of head start on the other two. But to compensate for that, the other two are going to have to use their movement to get only partway to you. So the first rafter of turkeys is going to launch themselves at you. And especially with the attack, their beaks sort of spread open. And in the darkness, you can see this sticky, gooey, seemingly venomous enzyme that's almost gluing their maws shut just as they all spread out and try to launch themselves at you. So I'm just going to roll for each rafter as a collective. So the first rafter that gets at you, they get to make 2 attacks. So the first attack is a 15 to hit where they bite, and then they're going to try to flap up and claw at you with their taloned feet. And the second attack is a 17 to hit. So 15 and 17, do those hit?
The 17 does hit.
So with the 17, so they do 3 damage to you.
This is necrotic, poison, psychic damage, or is it a different kind of damage? I do have resistance to those 3 types.
So the claws are only going to do slashing damage. Captain Ludlow is behind you. He's squinting clearly to try to make out what's going on in the darkness, but he stays firmly by your side and he draws his sword. It's not his turn yet, but just to let you know that I am considering him in the order. The other 2 rafters of turkeys that I mentioned, they all get to go before you. So 6 more turkeys emerge from the darkness and they're just 10 feet behind the 3 that have currently sort of come up on you. Next up is going to be Ludlow, who has drawn his sword, and he is going to attack these turkeys that are already upon you. Unfortunately, in the darkness, he's swinging at disadvantage, and his swing just goes way wide of any of the turkey's body parts, and so his sword just clangs on the dark ground. Next up, it is your turn. What would you like to do? So you have three of these turkeys on you. You've already damaged one of them with an arrow. You've got six more just past them in the darkness.
I will drop my longbow and draw my scimitar, and I will then attack the damaged abyssal turkey with my scimitar.
Okay, go ahead and give me the attack roll.
That is a 25.
There are the good rolls. All right, roll damage.
And that is 8 slashing damage.
Okay, so with 8 slashing damage, you manage to swing your scimitar and cut right through the neck of the damaged turkey, and your swing catches another one on its wing. Just to kind of explain, I'm doing just a collective HP for each rafter, but obviously, as you do the HP of each individual turkey, you'll take that turkey out. So the first one is down one turkey and has a second damaged turkey, but a third that is still perfectly fine. So we're back to all three rafters of turkeys. And so the first rafter that is damaged, I'm also going to reduce the damage that they can do to you on a single turn as a result of that. Unfortunately, they get a nat 20 for two turkeys to hit. So that is going to do 14 slashing damage to Steven.
Steven is now unconscious.
As Steven falls, you hear cursing from Captain Ludlow. And Captain Ludlow is just repeating in angry panic. Not again, not again, not again. And you see him clapping his hands, and they begin to glow as you are falling in slow motion. You're kind of seeing these actions. And as he begins to extend his hands towards you, the light in Captain Ludlow's hands go out. And as the light fades, you see terror on Captain Ludlow's face. Steven, as the turkeys have two more rafters that are taking turns and pecking at your body, life leaves you again. It's an unfortunately familiar feeling. As darkness envelops you, this time the darkness has a shape, though. This time you feel a doorway in the darkness. And unlike what stories, poems, and songs have told you, there's no light at the end of this tunnel. There's no light through this doorway that's beckoning you. But you do feel beckoned. And as you walk through the doorway, you feel somebody passing the other way and brushing your shoulder. What do you tell them?
So the first thing that Steven would do, given that he's a relatively unserious person, is offer a high five. I will leave it to the next player to determine whether they accept that high five. However, what Steven will say is, beware the turkeys. And he will continue on his way.
All right, for that high five, can you give me a departing acrobatics roll, please?
12.
JT, thank you very much for playing thus far into the adventure. Welcome to the game, Stefan Nunes.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. So before we begin, if you could tell us a little bit about your character, Smashin' Pam.
So Smashin' Pam is a half-orc barbarian. She lives in a small village where she works at the local brewery, driving big casks of ale to the local taverns. In her spare time, she likes to party. End of list. That's what she likes to do.
All right. So if you could also tell me, how did Smashin' Pam die?
Smashin' Pam isn't entirely sure she actually died. The last thing Pam remembers is positioning her wagon after disconnecting the horses at the top of this hill, handing her beer to one of her friends and saying, hey, check this out. And then after that, it was kind of like a flurry, and then she went flying, and then some guy high-fived her, and now she's here.
The next thing that happened after that, if I can slow it down just a little bit, things went dark. There was nothingness. It was just like being asleep. But then Pam felt a call and began walking towards a threshold, a doorway. And just as she was passing through the doorway, someone else that she couldn't make out in the darkness was passing by her. She could feel and sense that that other person was looking for a high five. So that's going to be your first roll of the game. If you could give me, let's call that sleight of hand.
All right. Oh, God. With my negative one to sleight of hand, that is an 8. Oof.
Okay. So with an 8, thanks to Steven's prior roll, you connect. It's not a great high five, but you do feel a connection there. You do feel something impact you. And just as immediate as that contact is, you suddenly feel air rushing into your lungs as you intake a desperate gasp of breath. You also hear a voice in your head. Hey, thanks for being here. I'm Abby. Hang on, give me just 1 second. And then if you remember The Matrix, when Neo is like learning how to fight.
Yes.
The armor around your torso just downloads the memories of Stephen Hark into you. So you know everything that has happened since Stephen Hark at the beginning of the previous episode was dug up out of the grave, wandered around this island, and then got assaulted by abyssal turkeys in the depths of this mine. As you open your eyes and look around the darkness, does Smash and Pam have dark vision?
She does.
Okay, so you can make out the shapes of 9 massacred abyssal turkeys. Their body parts, wings, drumsticks, breasts, head, neck, all of this viscera and whatnot is surrounding you in this tunnel. You don't have a sense of how long it's been since you slash this other you, because the memory feels like your memory, but it's very clear that it wasn't you in the memory doing these things. But you don't know how long you have been out. Give me a perception roll.
All right. That's a 4.
Okay, so unfortunately, the 4, at first there's silence around you. You can hear ambient white noise, like you can't make out anything distinct. And so it just feels as if you're in a cave and that there may be, in either direction of you, there may be sounds or some kind of noise, but nothing sounds very distinct. Nothing sounds very particular. You're pretty much at a fork in the cave right now. There is a path going uphill from where you are. The path that you are currently facing towards is sloping downward, and then there's the path back. So the 2 forking paths, up and down, and then the path that's relatively level going back behind you.
Can I tell that the one going back, is there like any light at the end of that tunnel? Do I have any indication of like an exit kind of place?
So as you look back and you're really examining, you do notice that there does seem to be light coming from behind you. And you do notice that the light, as you watch and as you continue examining your surroundings, that light is moving. So it seems as if someone or someones with a torch or torches, again, this is cause of your 4 perception roll, unfortunately. You can just tell that there's something with light that is moving in your direction from behind you.
All right, I'm going to turn around and yell out, hey, bro, with light. Bro.
You hear some susurro of whispering, and within a minute, a tall, dark-haired man with very, like, black swoop of hair, like very My Chemical Romance, wearing very stylish black armor. You recognize him as Captain Ludlow from your prior memories, the Order of Infernus members who had agreed to follow you / Stephen Hark to try to find the marvelous Professor Frankenfurter, whoever that is. And beside him, you see your faithful dog-headed street urchin friend, Groucho. He and Groucho each have one hand on a stretcher that they are dragging behind them. And Ludlow, as he comes around, holds the torch in front of him, squints because he doesn't have dark vision. And as he makes out your shape, he doesn't immediately look afraid. He doesn't look aggressive or anything like that. He looks mildly confused because he's looking around and just sees the turkey bodies and says, ma'am, there was a friend of mine was here, an elf man. Do you know where his body got off to? Did some other monster emerge and take the body away?
Pam's just going to glance around and be like, nah, bro, I think he left the party already. It's just me and these turkeys. Are we barbecuing? Should I set up a grill? Like, what's up here?
And so Abby speaks up, but only you can hear Abby, because unless you dictate otherwise, Abby is only going to communicate telepathically with you. Hey, do you maybe want to tell him what's going on, or should we keep that sort of on the down low right now?
And I'm going to whisper back to Abby, be like, girl, I got to tell you, I don't really know what's going on right now. I got this hangover and I woke up in a dark place. So like, if you want to tell him, I'd be psyched to figure out what's going on.
Abby extends their voice that now emits from your torso and says, hey, Ludlow. So we got a little bit of a rotating chair situation going on here. Stephen kicked the bucket, so now it's Pam's turn. I think Pam is going to be your key to
marvelous Professor Frankenfooter. You may want to follow her around and keep an eye on who comes after her potentially, because it seems like we might have a little bit of a shifting sand situation.
Captain Ludlow hears that, notices the armor that you're wearing, and then looks at you. I'm sorry, am I to understand that Stephen died and became you? And Abby just chimes in with, yep, that's it.
Pam is just going to be like, all right, I must still be drunk. I don't know what's going on, but I'm going to roll with it. So sorry about your bro, Stephen, but I guess I'm your bro now. So who's this nerd professor guy we got to get? Like, is he some nerd that's causing you trouble? Like, what's up?
So the dog-faced boy Groucho approaches you slowly and kind of like motions with his hand for you to come closer. He's about half your size. So do you like bend over or kneel down?
Pam's going to crouch down and be like, oh my God, a doggy, you're so cute. What's your name, buddy? Oh, right, you're Groucho. I know your name. Why do I know your name? Anyways, you're so cute. What's up?
So give me a persuasion roll with that.
That is an 8. Jesus Christ, these rolls.
All right, so Groucho does that thing where, like, as soon as you say his name, there's the momentary flash of surprise and you see hope in his eyes. And he does that thing like in a Hook where the kid takes Robin Williams's face to try to recognize Peter Pan. But unlike in Hook, he rolled very low on insight. So he just kind of shakes his head and says, I don't know. I think we have to just trust Abby. And Ludlow just says, yeah, hey, you're down to find the marvelous Professor Frankenfooter. I'm down to find the marvelous Professor Frankenfooter. We have our agreement. I don't see why it shouldn't transfer over. I suppose you're kind of grandfathered into the agreement that I had with Stephen. So yeah, we already cleared out the cave. So I suppose we could clear out and collect our reward and be going if you want to.
So yeah, I'm going to turn to Ludlow and just be like, all right, well, if that's just what we needed to do, then we're done, right? Let's just go.
Ludlow says, yeah. Hey, thanks for coming in, Groucho. It's very brave of you. You're earning your title as a loyal squire.
I'm going to scratch Groucho on the head, like between his ears, really rough.
All right, give me an animal handling roll. You can take advantage.
All right, my first one was a 16. My second one was I got a 16.
So with the 16, you get him to like tap his foot a little bit, like it bounces a couple times on the cave ground. As Ludlow begins to turn to lead you back out, he kind of stops. I'm going to roll perception for him real quick. He listens and he says, there's running water down this tunnel. He points down the descending tunnel on the right of the fork. Then he kind of listens again and says, and I also hear some kind of music. Kind of shakes it off and then he continues to say, so should we head back out to Lady Blanchette?
Because we're like, wait, stop. I love music, and music usually means a party, and running water usually means a riverbank party. So if it's not too much trouble, could we like check this out?
We could. I guess the danger's kind of been dealt with, and he kind of coughs somewhat modestly, which is very obviously his hint that he took care of all the danger.
Oh, dude, did you smash up all those things?
Yeah, I did.
I love some good smashing, and that was some real good smashing, my good bro.
Thank you. I was trying to save your predecessor, I suppose, but I wasn't fast enough. It brought you here, so maybe not all bad. And now I know, hey, if anything should happen, how to prioritize saving little Groucho here. And he kind of pats Groucho on the head, because you'll apparently be fine and just come back, albeit as someone else.
That's cool, you know, ever-ending cycle of life and death, I guess. Was there a bird guy? Why am I thinking of a bird guy? Where's the bird guy?
Groucho speaks up and says, yeah, Marks didn't want to stick around. He said that you wouldn't be able to get us off the island because you only have papers for yourself. And even if you were giving us gold and all that, at the end of the day, when push came to shove and they told us that we couldn't get on the boat without papers, you were just going to leave us behind, or he was just going to leave us behind, or not exactly sure what pronouns I'm supposed to use here, but we'll just go with that. But I stuck around because, I don't know, Stephen seemed like a good guy, and I guess you seem like you're at least fun.
Oh, that's so nice of you to say. And I gotta tell you, I would never abandon my doggy. My pets are like my family, and you are now my family.
You see him think about that for like 2 seconds, and he eventually settles on like a shrug and a nod and a smile.
She doesn't quite get what's this creature. She's like, it's a dog. It can talk. That's cool. But that's a dog, because she's not smart. She's just like, oh, OK, that's a dog.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think he recognizes that. Yes, I could correct her. But to what end?
Pam wants to take the remaining team members and check out the musical water situation.
So Ludlow says, well, the water's in one direction and the music seems to be coming from another direction. Which one do you want to check out first?
Okay, we are checking out the music first, because where there's music, there's a party.
So you can roll another perception roll. Depending on how you do, I'll roll for Ludlow and Groucho.
17, thank you.
So with a 17, Pam, you pause after Ludlow asks the question this time, and you listen, and you're able to, you turn your body so that one ear is facing down the forked path, and then the other ear is facing up. And with this repositioning of yourself, you're actually able to better isolate the sounds, because the water is coming from your right down the descending path and the music is coming from the left, and not just back the way you came, but also down sort of a different path deeper into the mines. So as you backtrack, you reach another fork where Stephen previously took the left. Instead, you are going to, relative to Stephen's path from the entrance, you're going to take the right fork. And with your roll, I'm just going to say you're able to trace the music because it's just echoing in this isolated tunnel. You hit another fork. This one's a straight T intersection. And rather than turning right down the T, you continue straight. And finally, the noise is getting very loud. And you come to this alcove that has crumbled rock around it, as if miners very recently broke through it and found this space behind it. Think video game place bomb here type of wall situation. And most of the crumbled rocks disintegrated, except for the rocks that can specifically be interacted with to use as throwable weapons.
I appreciate world building like that.
Yeah. Press Y to pick up rock. Beyond the blown out alcove that I mentioned, so like the rock is mostly dark black igneous rock of these cave walls. But on the other side of it, you see very yellow, very mason worked corridor. It's no longer a tunnel. It's very dimly lit. There is some kind of a moss or fungus that is growing on the walls and ceiling of it that's giving off a very faint phosphorescent glow. So you can see this sort of yellow sandstone hallway that leads up to a door with six openings in it. On either side of the door, you can see that the moss has grown out these sort of like blue bulbs that are about the size of baseballs. And I will say that without making you roll for anything, you can tell that these baseballs happen to be about the same size as the pipes, although there are six of those pipes and three of those balls. You hear a cacophony of noise coming from them, which sounds like... So as you approach it, you realize that if you put your hand on any one of the pipes, you can isolate or mute that sound. I'll give you for free that you can tell that you can pull out those bulbs and use them as mutes. So on the door, you see a carving of an elf in a long flowing gown sitting on the stump of a tree. The elf is playing a flute and there is illustrated music, a staff and notes coming out of the flute and floating over a serene looking, it almost looks like a bear because of its scale of size compared to the elf woman, but not quite. The face isn't bear-like. The face looks more like kind of a chipmunk. But whatever this is, whatever this strange creature is, it's curled up and looks very serene. And it just looks very huggable because it's just big and round.
Pam is going to approach this door. And she's not the smartest person in the world because she's super, super dumb. Oh my gosh, she's so dumb. But she does love music and she does have a high performance skill. So I think what she's going to do is she's going to start by pressing each of them individually to isolate what sound it is, to just kind of get a vibe check on each of the six sounds. Isolating each one of them, she's just kind of picking up the vibes and she's like, okay, I'm gonna grab three of these things. And I don't like the vibes on numbers 2 or 5 or 6. So I'm gonna try to mute those three and see what happens.
And so this sound, there is some harmony in it. There is some kind of alignment in it, but it's not quite there. You hear something behind the door. Let's go with perception.
Can I go with performance because she's a musician in her spare time and she dreams of that?
That's going to be the next roll I ask for, but...
A three.
Okay, so the three, all you're perceiving is just the particular noise that is coming out right now. Give me performance.
Performance is an 11.
All right, so with an 11, I can tell you that you're more right than wrong.
So Pam is going to poke around a little bit and she's like, all right, I kind of like the vibes on six a little bit more than I thought I did. So this time I'm going to try to mute 2, 3, and 5 and see if I like those vibes. See if we can get the party started with those ones.
And give me another perception roll and then another performance roll as well.
Another 3? Jeez, I watched it go from 16 and then tip over to 3. I think D&D Beyond is having problems. All right, yeah. And performance. Another 3 for a total of 7.
Oh, boy. So unfortunately with that, I would say that you kind of look at the door and you notice on the door that I mentioned that there's the staff of notes. There are 6 notes on the door. The first note and the 6th note are glowing right now.
So 1 and 6 are glowing.
Mm-hmm.
Pam's going to look at this like a dog cocking their head to the side when something doesn't quite make sense.
Groucho will speak up and say, it sounded like you had 2 correct before. It looks like you have 2 correct now, but you changed 1. So maybe you're closer than you think. Ludlow just kind of sighs and says, I'm not a musical person, so I'm going to let you work. And he just kind of groans and rolls his shoulder as he slides down against the wall to take a seat on the ground.
All right, I'm going to go back to these sounds because I am struggling with this. I'm not good at puzzles, so I'm just like trying.
In your defense, this is not a puzzle. this is such a subjective puzzle as far as
Okay, so Pam is just trying her best. She hasn't multi-classed into Bard yet, and she's really feeling that problem right now. So she is going to keep unmuted 1, 2, and 6, which means she's going to mute 3, 4, and 5.
Okay. So with 1, 2, and 6, the 1 and 6 remain lit.
All right. So I'm going to do 2, 4, 5.
One, 3, and 6 light up. The capybara on the door etching, little Zs, begin to animate in the stone. And the door slides upward into the stone over your head and opens into a large room that smells of sweet fruits. It smells of leaves and greenery. And you realize that there's a little oasis in here. You can see a little spring coming in and pouring into a pool. And out of the pool, as the door opens, a head pokes up with 2 cute little ears. And you and I would recognize this as a capybara head. And the head emerges from the water, and you realize that this head is about the size of your torso. And as the rest of the body rises up, it's one of those situations where the body rises and keeps rising long after you think legs should have started appearing, until finally there is a 12-foot-tall capybara approaching you and your party. What are you doing?
Pam could not be more excited about this. She found the party. Look at this location. Everything's super chill. And we've got the most friend-shaped animal coming to approach us right now. So Pam wants to make friends with the capybara. Just like, hey, buddy, what's going on? What are you doing in here? Anything, you know, hanging out? What's up?
The capybara, unfortunately, cannot speak. But it does approach you very, not too tremorously, but obviously with a certain amount of caution as it begins, like its little nose begins twitching.
I want to put out my hand, but in like the little kind of loose fist to let it sniff at my hand real gently. Pam loves animals. So she wants to make friends with this one and be as gentle about it as possible.
I would say that gives you advantage on an animal handling roll because that's just great animal sense.
12 and then a 17.
The giant capybara eventually does that thing where like, first it sniffs your hand and then it swoops its head under your hand and into a pet so that your hand is like open palm on its cheek. and it just looks deeply into your eyes. And you can tell based on the animal handling roll, as you give it scritches and put your other hand up to begin patting it, that this capybara has bonded with you in some magical way, thanks to you solving the puzzle.
Oh my God. Pam is beside herself with her new best friend. She's like, listen, guys, you guys are great, but this guy, have you met my new best friend, Buddy? His name's Buddy, because I don't know of a better name for him right now. And one day I'm going to get speak with animals, or maybe I can meet somebody who has speak with animals, and then we can learn their name and then we can tell them our name. So sorry, I'm so excited. Here's our new best friend. They're coming with us.
Groucho is just ecstatic. Like, he's clapping and he's so happy. He like asks, can I pet him? Are we going to ride him? Do you think he'll let us ride him?
Groucho, I love your excitement and I'm so into it. So you got to let him make friends with you first. So what you should do is go up to him and put out your hand real gentle. Did you see what I did? You just put out your hand real gentle and let him sniff, just like you would want to if somebody was approaching you, you know? Be good buddies. You're a doggy. He's a capybara. You're good.
I have what is about to be some terrible news for you. Because you were giving Groucho such intent instructions and because of his excitement, I gave him advantage on his animal handling roll and he got a nat 20.
Oh no, the capybara likes him more than me.
No, you can tell, as I mentioned, there's a magical bond because you're the one that opened the door. You can tell it's a situation where, like, loyalty to you comes first, but after that, Groucho is absolutely second. Captain Ludlow, he's not anti-capybara or anything like that. He's standing back and giving a respectful distance to you and your new companion, buddy, mount. But he does say, are we going to take that outside also? Because that could cause problems with the miners. I don't know if there's... And he kind of swoops around to your other side while Groucho is, you know, giving scritches to the capybara's neck. And you're seeing, like, the capybara's squinting. One of its legs is kicking like Thumper as Groucho, like, gives him proper scritches. But Captain Ludlow whispers in your ears and says, you know, Steven didn't really address this issue, but that's why Marks ran away, is because we don't have papers for Groucho or Marks to leave the island. So... we are going to bring them with us. We might want to figure out another way.
They're my pets. Can't I just like pay a pet fee or something? Like just take them to the vet and say that they're healthy to travel? Like they're not like us. They're pets.
No. Groucho is actually a refugee human. He's human with a dog's head. He's the result of an insane scientist experiment. The father of the criminal who we're currently hunting actually created him and all the other animal hybrids on this island.
So with this information, Pam is going to whip around and be like, some man did this to you? Are you okay?
Groucho kind of doesn't look at all affronted, just shrugs and says, oh, I guess I'll have to explain this to you and maybe if anyone else comes after you. But yeah, we're okay. It's just, you know, we can't be turned back into humans. Like, you know, my head is what it is, but, you know, I'm happy. I'm fine. I'm just basically a regular boy with a dog's head.
I mean, honestly, I've met a lot of regular boys and you are blowing them all out of the water. The dog's head is such a huge advantage for you.
Tongue lolls out and he's just doing that doggy smile where he's just like very happy and proud, clearly.
All right. Pam's kind of reeling from this because she doesn't like it when people get pushed around. That's why she's so big and like smashing, because she just doesn't like to see bullies. And she's a little bit worried that this doctor who transformed these people is a bully and he's doing it to people who don't like it or don't want it to happen. So I think she's going to turn back to Groucho and be like, so do you think we should do something about this doctor? Like, would it be good to make him not do this anymore? Or should we just like leave him alone? How do you feel about this as a person directly affected by this icky guy?
You can roll insight on this as Captain Ludlow crosses his arms and thinks for a few seconds. He kind of averts his eyes. And eventually he says, no one has seen Dr. Frankenfooter in years. And his son used his father's name to his advantage to gain inroads and meetings and embezzle both the Church of Honda Days as well as the Order Infernus. I think the more clear and present danger is the marvelous Professor Frankenfooter. However, given his crimes against humanity, if Dr. Frankenfooter, his father, is out there, it's entirely reasonable to assume that whatever rewards there might be for catching his son might potentially also exist, if not be greater, for catching the father.
Ugh, there's nothing worse than a bunch of Nepo baby nerds. Ugh, dad's a doctor, kid's a professor. They're out here doing science on people like a bunch of nerds.
Yeah, so with your 17 insight, you can tell that he's being truthful with you about just sort of the order of operations and priority. Like, there isn't any explicit manhunt for Dr. Frankenfooter, the father, because he is presumed dead. He hasn't been seen in years. But at the same time, if he is alive and if he were to be captured, that would be a bigger get. You can also tell with your 17 insight that while he is telling you the truth, his concern and focus, and you also remember this from the conversation you remember him having with Steven, that he's not concerned with reward money or bounties. He's concerned with the renown and glory that he gets from catching somebody significant.
Right. He wants the feather in his cap more than anything else. To him, Pam is just kind of like an instrument to that because he can't get attached. She's going to probably not meet a great end, and then he's going to have to start over with somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that, or just the fact that on the same token, he is attached to you because you or whoever happens to be occupying the body at this time, as he starts to realize you might be another one of these abominable creations to some extent, he realizes that you and whoever happens to be in your body at the time might just be the best bait or compass to find either of these Frankenfooters.
And Pam remembers like something about a Panda Express, but she's like, I don't know if that's super important. This guy seems to have a lot going on. And now I've got this capybara and I've got my doggy and I guess they need paperwork and paperwork sounds so boring. Ugh, maybe so skip the boat thing. All right. So I'm going to turn to Ludlow and be like, all right, where's this guy you want to capture or whatever?
He says, well, the marvelous Professor Frankenfooter is believed to be in the East, hiding out in the Vishnan Empire, which both the Church of Honda Days and the Order Infernus don't have much of a foothold. If that is correct, then we should, even if we're not catching the Panda Express, find a way to cross the ocean off the island and get onto the eastern shore. And he looks at the capybara and says, do you think that this can swim? And he examines the pool behind it and realizes it's very deep.
Yeah, and Pam, being the animal lover she is, she's like, oh my God, capybaras can absolutely swim. They are incredible. Oh my God, you're so smart. We don't need the boat, do we? Oh my God, my new best friend Buddy is going to be a buddy. So Pam is like beside herself. She's like, all my problems are solved. I can do whatever I want. This guy will stop talking to me about boring stuff. And now I can leave with my best friends, my dog, and my capybara.
Ludlow begins leading the way out and says, I know we heard rushing water before. And I also know, just without too much familiarity with these mines, that there is a river that goes out from the mines, from a hot spring that comes up and leads out to the south end of the island. They sometimes use it for dumping waste or loading barges with less valuable minerals that are going directly for shipment before refinery. Because if we can find that river, we might be able to get out here with the capybara without having to deal with any of the papers or customs requirements of leaving the island. And at that, Groucho looks very proud and very happy. You see a moment of sort of ruefulness that his friend Marx gave up all too quickly on this opportunity. But at the same time, you see him kind of realizing like, well, that's what you get for kind of bailing out. So there is a mix of emotions playing on the poor dog's face. But all in all, he's very happy.
So with regards to this world, so it's an island, it's a bunch of plateaus.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no like beach or shore or kind of like, you know, not super inhabited area where I could just like take off with the capybara and my buddy's on his back from like a beach rather than sewage pipe.
No, unfortunately not.
God damn it. Capybaras can't fly.
Yeah. So it's not, thankfully, it's not like a sewage pipe. It's more just like for, you know, an easier way for the miners to get rid of like, you know, excess dirt and things like that. Like they're not pooping in it.
Okay. As long as it's not super gross, because Pam would not subject the capybara to icky, dirty water like that.
No. It's not a sewage pipe. It's a waste pipe to, you know, be put a finer point on it.
It's like a trash chute with water as like the way the chute moves.
Which is essentially how sewage works. That's how a sewer pipe works as well.
Pam's just like, I'm really trying to convince myself there's no sewage in this, and you are not helping me out, buddy. Okay, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. All right.
Groucho sniffs the air as you all are approaching the rushing water. You're at this point, I'll say that you've been walking and talking, so you're back at the original fork with all the destroyed turkeys. Groucho sticks his snout in the air and says, I don't smell sewage. I don't smell poop. No poop. Just lots of blood. Lots of blood from these mutant turkeys.
Okay, I mean, that's to be expected from the situation we're in, Groucho. Excellent job with the sniffing things out. Love having you on the team. So, Ludlow, where's this river escape plan? Also, I think we should make sure to check with Buddy that he's okay with us all riding him.
Ludlow says, yeah, it's down this way. And he points down the descending path from your original starting point. And you hear the rushing water noise increasing in volume as you head down this path. But I'll leave it up to you. Buddy, at this point, as I mentioned, is magically bonded with you thanks to your solving the puzzle and thanks to your animal handling roles. So you do have something of a, I wouldn't call it quite telepathic, but you know how like the Lone Ranger is able to command his horse and like somehow like, I know, magic of TV, like the horse understands what he's saying and what his intentions are and where
like
the horse...
Like Pacific Rim guys were just attached in that like subconscious way where we can just understand one another.
Yeah, because I want to make it clear that because there is mind control in this world, right? Like there is the ability to dominate monsters and can actually legitimately control. This is a much softer touch than that.
Like, so this more is more than... like my familiar.
Yeah, there you go. I think so.
Yeah, that framework makes total sense. So I'm going to go up to Buddy and give him a little nuzzle and be like, hey, Buddy, you ready to go for a swim?
He gives us a little wiggle, like that kind of like starts at his shoulders and like vibrates down along his back to his booty where like it ends at his tail, giving like a little tinkle. He is going to get into the water and then kneel down for all of you to climb on.
Okay, so I want to be at the back because I am the biggest one. And I want my buddy Groucho right in front of me, and I want Ludlow in front of him, so that way Groucho is like right between us so he doesn't get loose or slip off anywhere.
So, quick question. Because you have all your starting inventory, I'm assuming, does your starting inventory include any kind of rope?
Hempen 50 feet. I was actually about to say, like, I want to make some kind of like, not a like collar, but like a little bit of like a harness that lets us hold on to the capybara. And I figure with 50 feet, I could do one of those like across the chest harnesses that goes across the back where there's like it's an X on the front and then it goes like straight across the back. So that way there's two sets of handholds on the back and it just crosses over his chest. So that way he still has like full range of movement and doesn't have the weird vibe of like a rope around his neck, because I don't like that vibe for my buddy.
Perfect. All right. Let me see. Give me a nature roll to see how well. All right. So with a 14, you do a perfectly serviceable job of putting it on. I will say that with a 14, if there is a certain distress or strain on the rope, I might have to have you roll a dex saving throw to see if it stays together, if it gets tangled up. And it's like that thing when like, you know, a dog's leash is maybe a little bit too big and there's a chance that the dog's leg could get tangled up in it. Mm. Because it's just, yeah, like it's not very likely to happen, but it's there with a 14. Keep that in my back pocket. For now, what I want is just I'm going to roll strength checks for Ludlow and Groucho. If you could give me a strength check as well, please.
That would be a 15.
Okay. So Buddy takes off going through this very warm pool of water, and you can see that there's this tunnel. You can see boats moored. You can see different work sheds and even like certain work areas where there clearly is a certain amount of cleaning work and other types of repair work for tools and things like that done here. The water is used for cleaning and tempering and things like that. You can see a small forge, but there is this tunnel where you can hear the sort of like increasing volume of rushing water as the spring water spills over into it and basically creates a water slide situation. Buddy puts their front paws up onto it and then sort of hoist up over the lip and then just goes splayed out. Like Buddy isn't even swimming. Buddy is just like splayed out, all four of his legs like in each direction as you all are riding. And just as Buddy's body just kind of goes with the curves, he's riding up maybe halfway up the wall on some of these turns as it spirals down and then whips back.
Pam is having the time of her flipping life. She is hooting and hollering. Every time there's like a sharp turn, she's like, woo, it's like my wagon, but on water, what?
And as you are letting out that whoop, Unfortunately, Groucho only got a 3 on his strength check to be able to hold on.
Can I do something to like grab him? Can I do a save to grab him? I pass his baby.
Yeah, go ahead and give me a dex save.
A 6.
So with a 6, you unfortunately have a choice to make. You ever have that moment when you're about to do something very clumsy and you have the thought before you start executing the movement, like, it is entirely possible that I'm going to knock this thing over. And then as you knock the thing over, it's like, oh, there it goes. Now I'm going to try to catch it, but I'm going to drop the thing in my other hand to do it. You're at that crossroads right now. You kind of went into this water slide with Groucho right in front of you, thinking, it's possible if this gets too crazy, he's going to slip and fly off over my left shoulder. And sure enough, you have that moment of, oh, he's going over my left shoulder. Now I can either try to grab him, or I could tangle Buddy up and force Buddy to have to make a save so that we don't end up in some kind of a thing. Which one do you want to do? Or you can leave it up to Groucho to try to make his own desperate last save.
I told Groucho we're family, and I'm going to jump into that water and go after him. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to trust that my familiar will sense that I am doing something and like sense that I need them to stop or slow down or come back for me.
Give me a dex save as you dive for Groucho.
Oh, Jesus. That would be an unnatural 1, a 2-1.
So with a 1, unfortunately, Groucho is flailing and you just hear this as he just gets swallowed up.
No!
It's like when somebody falls into the water in anime. It's not like you can see his head above the water. Like he just disappears under the current. And Captain Ludlow at the front of the capybara reaches back and grabs your foot by the ankle so that you don't completely fall off. One of your arms and shoulders is in the water. He's got your foot to keep it from falling completely over the other side. You're still barely on Buddy.
Can I do a strength save to try to climb back up?
Yep, you can. But Buddy is now going to execute a dex save to try to, since he intuited what you want, he's going to try and turn sort more sideways and curl up so he can basically be an enormous fluffy catcher's mitt for Groucho.
Oh, baby.
Unfortunately, as he tries to execute that turn, the current catches him in just the wrong way and pushes him over so that he starts rolling sideways in a barrel roll. And both you and Captain Ludlow are thrown off. You can hear Groucho sort of gasping for air as he fights to stay above the current. I also need you to make a dex saving throw to make sure you can keep your head above the water so that you don't drown as well.
Baloo, don't get mad at me, but I just realized I have advantage on dex saving throws.
Well, now you can give yourself advantage, but I'm not going to...
No, there's no retroactive, but like, okay, so there's the first one. That's an 8. There's the second one. That's a 2. I'll take my 8.
All right, so with an 8, I'll need you to make a con save.
Okay. Another 8.
So with that 8, as you're trying to fight up to get above water, like Pam thinks her head is above water to try to gasp in some air to hold her breath, because you can hold your breath for, I think, 1 minute plus a minute for every modifier on your con ability, which is a fairly long time for a character with good con, which I assume Pam might have. Which, yeah, you can hold your breath for up to 2 minutes. But the problem is that with your deck save, you thought your face was above water and then a splash of water just came right over it and you got like a mouthful of water when you wanted air. So eventually you all just fly out of the cave and you are careening through open air out towards the lake that this island is set on. Because of the dex failures and because of the positions that you all in, you all are basically belly flopping, careening in from 3 stories up into open ocean water that you would have otherwise needed to be braced for with Buddy gracefully diving in for you. So you all are going to take fall damage from this, each one of you.
Okay, can I try to grab Groucho in midair and like hold him in front of me and land on my back?
All right, that's going to be another dex save, but normally you would have advantage on this, but because of the difficulty of this, I'm going to impose disadvantage, which means you only get to make 1 roll.
Okay, I got a 7 then, because my first was a 7, the second was an 11.
All right, so I will have him, as he's trying to cough up the lungful of water that he swallowed right before the tunnel opened up, I'm going to have him make a desperate dex save to try to clutch onto you as well.
Whew.
All right, he got an 18.
Oh, thank God, my baby will be okay.
So as you're flailing for him with your hands, he manages to just grab one of your ankles and he just kind of yanks and pulls himself to basically tackle into your chest.
I'm going to hit the water and I'll break it for him.
Exactly. So you and Ludlow are taking full fall damage from this. So that's only 5 bludgeoning damage for you, which as a barbarian, I think you might have resistance to that.
I don't have resistance to bludgeoning unless I am in rage mode. Can I enter rage retroactively since I'm flying off a thing?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so we've landed.
So just like in a movie, first up comes your head with Groucho as you clutch your dog boy to you. Then up comes Ludlow as he whips his My Chemical Romance black swoop of hair out of his eye. And then up comes Buddy just looking happy and pleased with the little ride he got to go on.
Do I have to roll to not fall in love with Ludlow?
You can.
What would that be? A charisma save?
That's a charisma save.
All right. I got an 18. I can resist for the time being.
I think the fact that you have to resist is already kind of answering the question that's being asked, in my opinion.
She's like, wait, is he hot? I think he might be hot.
You are currently on the southern end of the island, so you look around and you can see directly to the east of you. From where you are, the city of Panda is this enormous port city, way to the northeast. But in terms of like the closest shore to the east, you can see that outside of the port city, there's open plains and hills that stretch down, and then directly east of you is this forest. And you can make out fire smoke coming from a clearing in the forest. Like you can see a break in the trees and there seems to be a fire and maybe like a large campsite or bonfire happening directly to the east of you. Down directly south, there is a farther shore that you can't really make out. You can just barely make out the line of a mountain of some kind. To the west, you can see a pair of port cities, one that is directly to the west of you. This one looks kind of haggard. It's not nearly as big a city. It's more of like a town that just happens to have a couple of docks attached to it. But the other one is a much larger city with tall spired buildings. However, it does have a large set of docks. It does look like it's supposed to be a bustling port, but there isn't a single ship on it. And even from this distance, you begin to realize like, oh, you can kind of make out movement and activity of the other locations, but this city seems to be completely darkened. So Ludlow points all this out to you and he swings and says, that there, the one to the northeast, that's Panda. Over to the west, and he points at the darkened city with the docks. He says, that's the city of Bai. They're on quarantine right now. To the south of it is the city of Wensler. Very small city, but I believe our destination is to the east. And he returns his arm pointing to Panda. So what would you like to do?
Pam's going to look at Ludlow and be like, all right, so Panda is where that Frankfurter guy you're looking for is?
He nods and says, well, the letter that you had, or that Stephen had when he was unburied, said that Frankenfooter is waiting for him in the heart of the Vishnan Empire. Panda isn't the heart of the Vishnan Empire. It's the port city on the western end of it.
This is where you want to go. Groucho, is there anywhere you want to go, or are you just like along for the ride?
Groucho, again, tongue lolling out. He's completely over the trauma of everything that just happened. He's been looking from Ludlow to you, like tennis match style. And he's just so ecstatic to be included. He just says, Panda sounds great.
All right, Groucho, good a contribution. Let's go to Panda. And I'm going to nuzzle Buddy and make sure that he's okay from the fall. And I also have in my inventory, I have some rations. So I want to give him a little treat.
As you examine Buddy, give me a nature or medicine roll. You can take your pick.
I'll do nature. That is a 15.
Okay, so with a 15, as you all begin to swim over and get on and like mount him, you realize that he's not terribly hurt, but he also took some damage from that fall. So you could have him swim you all the way to the docks of Panda, but he might take on a level of exhaustion from that. Nothing serious, but you know, just a little bit of like a, like gives him disadvantage on certain rolls and things like that. Or you could go to the east and camp out in the woods or something like that.
Does feeding him do anything to like buff him a little bit?
I'll say that I'll prevent the exhaustion after a short rest rather than incurring it. But the other thing that Ludlow would point out to you, given the whole bits about papers and all that, is that if we're going to enter through the port, the papers and lack thereof, and he kind of nods his head at Groucho, might be an issue. But once we get out of these particular ports, I don't think there'll be as much of an issue about traveling and constantly having to circumvent customs. It's just a matter of these particular cities that are concerned with the well-being of the refugees.
All right. So Pam is admittedly a little confused because politics and like borders and customs, that's not her vibe. Like, that's not how she does things. So she's basically thinking like, how do we just avoid all of that paperwork stuff? And she's going to be turn to Ludlow and just be like, dude, is there, can we just like not, can we just like hop on the capybara and like have him swim someplace where we don't have to deal with all this stuff? Like, ew.
He points at the direct shore that I mentioned is a little bit closer. And he says, yeah, if we just go on land there, we should probably be cautious about whoever's lighting that fire in the forest. But if we proceed directly on land, we should be fine, because entering the city by way of the highway, they won't ask for papers. They'll just ask us to identify ourselves and state our business. But we won't have to present anything.
Easy by land, harder by sea kind of situation.
Yeah, it's like okay. I said, the papers question is more to make sure that the refugees on the island aren't trying to breach the ports or leave the island on a ferry that they shouldn't be.
That is so unfair. Oh, my God. So, yeah, Pam has made up her mind and she's going to go to that shore that he just mentioned. So that way they can travel over there, get the hell off this stupid island that's really gross and oppressive, that does mean things to animals that she doesn't like. And just hop on the capybara and go to that closer shore so that way they can get a little short rest, so that way Buddy can feel a little bit better. Buddy did a lot for us today.
Great. So it's maybe about just under an hour of swimming, which at this point, since Stephen arrived in the mines, since you took Stephen's place and then got out of the mines and are now swimming back, it's not quite sunset yet. Like, the sun's getting low on the horizon, but it's not quite evening time yet. But as you reach the shores, you begin to hear music. You can hear it coming from in the woods, and you can hear it coming from the direction that you know you saw the smoke from that bonfire that I mentioned.
So Pam loves a party and knows that music means a party, but her biggest concern right now is Buddy. Buddy's her buddy. Groucho's her second in command. This Ludlow guy seems to know stuff that's going on. So her biggest priority is making sure that Buddy is 100% taken care of. She wants to check him over completely, make sure he's fed, make sure he has fresh water, give him some scritches, you know. And she wants Groucho to be her squire in this, so he will learn how to take good care of an animal.
As you do that, the music continues playing as the sun continues to get lower. Are you camping out on the beach?
So, yes, we are going to do a little... I think I actually have something in my inventory for this. I'm going to play some Dungeons & Dragons. Yes, I am going to set up my bedroll and my mess kit so that way we can all sit around for a couple of minutes, do, I guess, a short rest, get some HP back, and kind of recombobulate after being shot out of a waterfall into a big pool.
So I will roll... hit dice for Ludlow. Ludlow gets a full recovery on just one hit dice, and so does Groucho. And fortunately, Buddy doesn't do quite as well, but didn't take too much damage from the fall himself. So he's close enough to full. There's no limp, put it that way. So at this point now, it's transitioned to the sun is setting at this point after you've been resting. The music is continuing. It's just been changing in tone and rhythm and things like that. Starting to get a little bit faster.
Ooh, that's how we know that the party is still ramping up. So Pam hears the music and she's pretty excited about this, but she also, like, she's not smart, but she has a decent enough, like, street sense to know, like, you don't just raid somebody else's party. You want an invite, or you want some kind of polite way to join in. You don't crash. So she's going to turn to Ludlow and Groucho and ask him, like, hey, you guys want to, like, check out that music? Like, not like aggro kind of check it out, but, like, let's just, like, take a little walk and, you know, maybe see what's going on.
Ludlow shrugs and thinks about it and says, honestly, that might be a good idea. The most dangerous things in this region aren't things that produce music, so.
Music means party. Party means friends. Let's go make some friends.
And he looks at Groucho and says, safety in numbers. And Groucho looks just anxious more than anything else about meeting people.
Can Pam pick up on his, like, do I need to roll, or can I just pick up on, like, he's a little bit nervous about it?
I think it's pretty obvious based on what you know, because you already know about the Groucho and people like him are the result of, like, scientific experiments, and they were put on that island more for their safety than for other people's.
Pam's gonna pick up on this, and she's gonna kneel down by Groucho, get on his level so that way they're eye to eye, and put her hands on his shoulders and be like, listen, you are valid just the way you are. You are a perfect, precious creature, and I love you. And if anybody is mean to you, I'm going to take this great axe that's strapped to my back, and I'm going to cut them in half, top to bottom, because I love you, and people need to be nice. Okay, buddy?
Give me a persuasion roll.
All right, persuasion. That is a 4.
So with a 4, he looks at you with like very baleful eyes, and then he's going to look at Ludlow instead. And Ludlow just puts a hand on his shoulder and just says, don't worry, stiff upper lip. You can handle this.
And I'm going to turn to Ludlow and be like, okay, but if anybody's mean to him, I expect you to hit them.
Ludlow pouts his lower lip a little bit and then just kind of like shrugs and nods and does a, yeah, sure.
Can I roll intimidation on him? I want him to listen to me.
Yeah, you can roll intimidation.
The love of God. Hell yeah, 21.
All right, so the 21, like he goes from doing the half nod to his eyebrows snap up and he says, yes, 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 yes.
Good, good. We protect our precious boy around here. So yes, from this, I'd like to do like a gentle kind of like, let's poke around. Let's hear where that's coming from. Let's not get too rowdy. Let's just like see who's up and say hi.
All right. So are you taking the lead? Do you want Ludlow at the front?
I want to take the lead and I want Groucho to hop on my back like a backpack.
Okay. So you are Empire Strikes backing. Sorry, I missed an opportunity there. You are Empire Strikes backpacking him through the forest. And after about a quarter mile, you begin to see the bonfire. And you can see that there's this large glen in the forest that's just wide open. And you can smell the unmistakable aromas of food, of drink. The music has clarified itself now that you're breaking up the distance and you can hear like full band and everything. And you can start to make out as you get closer and closer that at first from a distance, what you thought might have just been trees getting in the way between you and the light, you realize that there are a couple dozen people that are running and dancing around the fire. They're all wearing loose sort of earthen looking clothing as if they're wearing clothes made of hemp and other sorts of like soft materials. And I'm going to assume that Smash and Pam doesn't want to break into the clearing right away. Like you kind of want to reach the edge of the tree line and maybe observe just a little bit.
Yeah, she wants to reach the edge of the tree line and kind of check out the party, see where like the different groupings of people are and try to spot like a small to mediumish group of people that she could like walk up to and be like, oh, hey, guys, what's up?
So there is a trio hanging out close to the trees. They're kind of sitting on a log together. They have drink cups in their hands. It's three women that are all sitting together. There are some guys further off in the distance, kind of dancing by the fire, doing that thing where the guys are very obviously trying not to look at those three women. But, you know, they're dancing and they definitely keep dancing in a direction that looks towards the women in question. And then there are another, you know, half dozen or so people that are just kind of like strolling around. They're kind of doing like very dorky, like Bonnaroo hippie dancing around the fire while the band plays. The rest of the people are mostly working. There are people at the buffet that are continually cutting up fruits and preparing them into fruit bowls and salads and things like that. There are the bands, and then there are a couple other people that are kind of walking around and painting and stuff like that, and just kind of like doing impressionistic quick paintings of the people as they're in their revelry.
So it's feeling kind of like a big festival rather than just a small party. It feels like Pam's come into like, oh, I know some druids who do this when the sun is out all day long. It's usually a really good time, but they're really like picky about like their rituals and who sees them. So we should probably start really slow. So Pam's going to approach these three ladies on the log, like very chill, like as chill as she can, because she knows that she's a gigantic orc lady. She knows like how she might come across to these ladies, but she's, you know, she's a nice lady. Yep. She's just going to walk up and be like, oh, wow, it's so beautiful here. We just got here from out of town and saw all of this. And like, it's so gorgeous. What's this all about?
And so there is a gnome, a dwarf and an elf among the trio that are sitting on the log. The gnome is the one who introduces herself first. And she says, oh, hi, I'm Emma. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Emma.
And so she does that thing where she holds her hand like with the back of her palm up as if she's hoping you'll like just shake it and say Ashante or something.
Pam misunderstands this and fist bumps her and says, hey, I'm Pam.
Give me a persuasion roll on that.
15.
All right. So with a 15, you know how sometimes somebody does that kind of thing, like one person can do that move and it just rubs somebody the wrong way, but somebody else does the exact same thing and they just find it unbearably charming. It's clear that it's the latter with you with that fist bump thing. Like she kind of like looks at the dwarf, looks at the elf, and then they all do that like in unison giggle thing where they fall forward a little bit. And she says, oh my God, please come sit with us. Come sit with us.
I would love to. Have you met my buddy who's hanging on my back here? This is Groucho. He's a sweetheart. And that's Ludlow over there. And I'm pretty sure we left the copy bar. Sorry, I can't remember. Did the copy bar come with us?
I'm going to assume that you left him on the beach, unless you want him to have followed you deep into the forest.
I think I want him with us, but I'm going to think that he found like a cozy spot right off onto the side where he's just like curled up napping on the tree line.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
So I'm going to sit down with my new best friends.
And meanwhile, I do want to point out that Groucho, when you introduce him, like kind of pops his head from the side of you like John C. Reilly and Step Brothers and just goes, hello, Miss Ladies. And they find him unbearably charming as well. I'm not even going to roll for it. They just do.
He's a little cute doggy who talks.
Yeah, they do that like their hands over their mouths thing where they're like, oh, my God. And so they're just ecstatic. Captain Ludlow, seeing you introducing yourself to the women, decides to move over towards the men by the fire that were very obviously trying not to look at the women. So he goes over and introduces himself separately to them.
Pam's going to clock this and look over at the ladies and be like, they're dancing just like birds do, you know, just like trying to be all flashy, trying to get your attention. It's so cute.
Emma, the gnome, looks at you and says, so Pam, what do you do?
So usually, like, I just hang and chill and have a great time. But like for like a work thing, I drive a wagon. I drive a wagon between a brewery and all the taverns in my village. And it is so much fun. I meet so many people and I get to party with the best folks.
The elf woman reaches out her hand very much the same way Emma did and says, my name is Sophia. And I must say, it is so brave to hear your story, to hear how you live without fear, without any mistrust in your heart. It is beautiful. And I thank you for sharing that with us.
And Pam is so confused by this. She's just like, okay, cool. And with Sophia, instead of doing a fist bump, she's going to go in as if Sophia was going for a low five and then kind of like high five her from the bottom.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And again, I'm going to roll. She finds it unbearably charming. Rolls are coming up in your favor.
Pam's a straight shooter. You know, you can't help but like a straight shooter.
Yeah. And the dwarf says, I'm Nicole. Yeah, hey, Nicole. We're artists. We're an artist collective. So, you know, we love just sharing with people and inviting people in and getting to hear their stories and to trade stories. You know, right now, not that we're blaming you for it, you know, we were just kind of all marinating in our shared story of the injustice that we're currently facing. And we were just kind of currently having a brainstorm before the party really gets underway and everybody gets too carried away of things we can do to really affect change.
There's oppression happening here.
Emma speaks up and says, oh, my God, yes. We're facing some problems from, you know, for lack of a better term, but because this society is very patriarchal, we refer to it as the man as a shorthand. But it's sort of an all-encompassing idea of the system of oppression with which we are all currently yoked. We all here are certainly one with enjoying nature and the forest and things of that nature. And, you know, it certainly inspires our art, but, you know, we would be living in the city and living amongst its citizens as artists were it not for an unjust ruling by a corrupt judge who placed us all and seized all of our wealth and belongings into a conservatorship is what they called it.
So Pam hearing this, she doesn't quite understand like systemic oppression and court ruling, but she does know when a man is bad. She's very like, she just hears like there's a man and she's like, Oh, there's a man. And she's going to call over to Ludlow and be like, hey, why are you talking to those men?
Ludlow kind of gives the classic look of a dude who just very dutifully knows that he is doing something wrong, just puts a hand on his chest, looks around, just puts a hand up to the other guys without another word, and just immediately marches back over towards you and stands directly behind your right shoulder with his arms crossed.
Thank you, because I hear the man here is really bad. And I'm going to turn to the girls. It's like, is it those men's? Should it be those man's or are those man's good man's?
And Sophia says, no, they are our compatriots in our current suffering. Would you be willing to potentially hear? Because I believe that as a new face, you might be able to help us.
I mean, I'm into it and I definitely want to help you, but I'm also helping this guy and this other guy, like Ludlow. Is that Frankenstein guy? Is he here? Is he? He's the guy who's like nearby-ish, right? Do you guys know the Frankenstein guy? And she turns to the ladies and she's trying to like figure out like, is any of this connected? Like, can we do these two things at the same time? Or is this like an entirely different guy?
And you see Emma, Sophia, and Nicole all trade glances. And Sophia leans forward with an air of urgency.
Actually, if you are referring to the marvelous Professor Frankenfurter, his wealth and many of his belongings were placed into the conservatorship along with our treasures. So if you were to help us, you would certainly gain access to many clues that could lead you to his whereabouts.
All right, Pam's going to look at Ludlow and be like, so what do you think about this? Do you think this is going to help you? Is this like, what do you think?
Ludlow kind of glances from them to you, back to them, and then he just kind of gives a shrug and basically says he doesn't see anything wrong with it, but it's up to you.
All right. Well, Pam, first and foremost, wants to party with her new friends. And if they're going through troubles, that's going to put a damper on the party vibe. So she's going to look at Emma, Sophia, and Nicole, her new best friends that she's sitting down next to. So she's the same height as them. And she's like, you know what? I think we can help you because it will also help us. And I love it when everybody can get helped. But first, we've had like a super long day in like this mine. And then we had to go on this water slide. And then we got this 3-story fall. It's been a whole day. So would it be cool if we just like partied with you tonight and got like a nice rest and then we can deal with like whatever the stuff is tomorrow?
Emma just kind of giggles and says, oh my God, girl, you're crazy. I love you. Welcome to our druid tribe. We call ourselves the Never Politicos, or the Nepos for short.
Oh my God, I love it. Where's the bar?
Thank you for listening to D&D Versus. This episode features J.T. Embley as Stephen Hark, Stefan Nunes as Smash and Pam, and yours truly, Yanato Blue, as your Dungeon Master. D&D Versus is not affiliated with Wizards of the Coast. Support our podcast and get access to additional content at patreon.com/D&D Versus. Our next episode comes out on May 1st.